from Srimad Bhagavatam, fourth canto, chapter 28, entitled Puranjan Becomes a Woman in the Next Life, text number 10. Gandharva Yavanakantan Kalakanya Pamaditam Atum Prachakrame Raja Tampurim Manikamata. Translation. The city of King Puranjan was overcome by the Gandharva and Yavana soldiers, and although the king had no desire to leave the city, he was circumstantially forced to do so, for it was smashed by Kalakin. Purport. The living entity, separated from the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, tries to enjoy this material world. He's given a chance to enjoy it in a particular type of body, beginning with the body of a Brahman down to that of a microbe. From the Vedic history of creation, we can understand that the first living creature was Lord Brahma, who created the seven great sages and other Prajapatis to increase the universal population. Thus, every living entity, according to karma, his past desire and activities, gets a particular type of body, from that of Brahma to that of a microbe or germ in stool. Due to long association with a particular type of material body, and also due to the grace of Kalakanya and her Maya, one becomes overly attached to a material body, although it is the abode of pain. Even if one tries to separate a worm from stool, the worm will be unwilling to leave. It will return to the stool. Similarly, a hog generally lives in a very filthy state, eating stool, but if one tries to separate it from its condition and give it a nice place, the hog will be unwilling. In this way, if we study each and every living entity, we will find that he will defy offers of a more comfortable position. Although King Puranjan was attacked from all sides, he was unwilling to leave the city. In other words, the living entity, whatever his condition, does not want to give up the body, but he will be forced to give it up because, after all, this material body cannot exist forever. The living entity wishes to enjoy the material world in different ways, and therefore, by nature's law, he is allowed to transmigrate from one body to another, exactly as a person transmigrate from the body of an infant to a child, to a boy, to a youth, to a man. This process is constantly going on. At the last stage, when the gross body becomes old and invalid, the living entity is reluctant to give it up, despite the fact that it is no longer usable. Although material existence and the material body are not comfortable, why does the living entity not want to leave? As soon as one gets a material body, he has to work very hard to maintain it. He may engage in different fields of activity, but whatever the case, everyone has to work very hard to maintain the material body. Unfortunately, society has no information of the soul's transmigration, because the living entity does not hope to enter the spiritual kingdom of eternal life, bliss, and knowledge. He wants to stick to his present body, even though it may be useless. Consequently, the greatest welfare activity in this material world is the furthering of the Krishna consciousness movement. This movement is giving human society information about the kingdom of God. There is God, there is Krishna, and everyone can return to God and live eternally in bliss and knowledge. A Krishna conscious person is not afraid of giving up the body because his position is always eternal. A Krishna conscious person engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord eternally. Therefore, as long as he lives within the body, he's happy to engage in the loving service of the Lord. And when he gives up the body, he's also permanently situated in the service of the Lord. The saintly persons are always free and liberated, whereas the karmis, who have no knowledge of spiritual life or the transcendental loving service of the Lord, are very much afraid of giving up the rotten material body. So somehow or other, the living being clings to the material body. And Srila Prabhupada is stating that although the condition in the material body is painful, still we are hanging on. There's a story that may shed some light on this situation. And it is the story of a small town. And the inhabitants of this small town would constantly come and complain to the mayor. This complaint, that complaint, endless complaint. So finally the mayor said, "I have a brilliant idea. We're going to have an exhibition of problems. Everyone can bring his problem and we just put it on display in the town hall. And everyone can come and see that problem." So people had a great time. It was wonderful. They're all looking at the problems like, "Whoa, look at that one. Oh, something else." In this way, it was a very entertaining day. And then just at the end of the exhibition day, everyone was ready to go home. And the mayor was standing next to the door and said, "Wait a minute, wait a minute, where are you all going?" I said, "We're going home." He said, "No, nobody is going home just like that. You can't leave all these problems here. Everybody has to take one problem home." So, you know, people went back into the hall and had another look. But this time, not in a playful mood, but in a serious mood. And they looked at all the problems and think, "Well, which one shall I take?" And they looked at all the problems and, "Well, I don't know about that one. I don't know about that one." And in the end, everyone took his own problem back home. Because, you know, at least you know what to expect. Right? You know what to expect. And this is family life. We are together with our brothers and sisters, and it's not exactly paradise. Right? The family is not all sweet and rosy, but all right, we stay there for our security. They're supposed to help you. And like, you know the problems of your family, and you sort of know how to deal with them, you know what to expect. So better a known problem than an unknown problem. Therefore, better this body, even although it gives us pain. Better hold on to it because, you know, you don't know what you're going to get next. You know, think about that, anxiety. So in this way, a false sense of security. Bhagavatam says, "Atma sanyesu asatsu api na yigyasi tu atma tattvam," that we will hold on to fallible soldiers. My family will protect me, but they can't protect themselves. How will they protect us? They are themselves fallible soldiers. So what protection can they give to us? In this way, we are must gradually give up our false sense of security. The modern society is just doing the opposite and creating unlimited false security, like credit card. You know, credit card. Got no money, no problem. Got credit card. I won't use it, but in case of emergency, I've got a credit card. Right? Just, if something happens, then, credit card. Throw some money at the problem, and in this way, well, you know, I'll manage to get out of trouble. Credit card. And when everything fails, insurance. You can insure everything. From the top of the bottom, insure it all, from the back of the front, every possible angle, cover it. But some things can no longer be insured, like earthquakes. Because natural disasters statistically have increased over the last so many years in the world. And although in the past one could take an insurance out on a natural disaster, no more. No more. So, yes, what to do? Of course, the entire material world is a natural disaster. It's like, I am sorry to say, but there is no happy end in the material world. It doesn't exist. It always ends with death. So, what to do? So the first approach of the devotee to his material attachment is knowledge. Yat anujasina yukta karma granti nibandana. With the sword of transcendental knowledge, he is cutting the knot of karma, the karma granti, in the heart, that which binds him. So our first weapon is knowledge. Looking at the temporary nature of the material energy, looking at the pointlessness of trying to build a kingdom in this world when at the same time as we're building it, time is breaking it down. So all that trouble, for what? For something that's already breaking down under your eyes. And then your body breaks down. So what is the very body you're residing in? That breaks down. So what's the point of working so hard in this world to develop and maintain our material enjoyment? So that's knowledge. So with the weapon of knowledge, we can cultivate some detachment. We can gradually let go a little bit. But then it says in Bhagavatam, Balavan Indriyan Gramo Vidvamsama Vikarsati. The senses are so strong that even a man of learning is still struggling. So even transcendental knowledge, even one who has thoroughly studied all the books and has actually a vision based on which is more long term. It is said that transcendental knowledge means the long-term vision, Shreyas. Shreyam acharanam sada. That one should always act with the long-term vision and engage all his energy, all his possessions, all his intelligence and all his words for the long-term benefit. That is knowledge. But it is difficult, because sometimes the immediate enjoyment looks so good. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes that sometimes when two armies are fighting, that not only are the two enemies standing opposite of each other, but he also points out that there are spies who infiltrate in the army of the enemy, and they are with the enemy. So then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, in the same way, in the war with Maya, Maya is not only outside of us, Maya has also entered within. And Maya is within our mind, within our consciousness, within our heart. In this way, Maya, she knows our secret most desires. The ones that nobody knows. Even your close ones. Those things you would never tell anyone that which is hidden in the innermost chamber of the heart. That Maya knows it. And Maya has two Shaktis, the Avaranatmika Shakti, the covering potency, and the Praksipatmika Shakti, the throwing potency. And there she comes. She just throws that opportunity, the one that you were always dreaming of, the one that you really wanted, right under your nose, tune, and balances it up and down, tune, 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 tune. Take it away, please. I don't want it. And then the Bhagavad Gita verses like that, the senses are so strong that sometimes a man is swept away against his will, like a boat is swept away by the wind. Take it away. What can I do? What can I do? It is stronger than me. So, in this way, Balavan Indriyan Gramo Vidvan Samapikar Sati, the senses are so strong. Even a person who knows is still weak. Therefore, of course, we find Param Drista Nivartate. It is mentioned one must develop that higher taste in devotional service. How to develop that higher taste. I have another example about higher taste, which I like, and I'll share it with you. It's about a feast that is being served out. Here in India, we're all sitting in rows, and they come around with buckets, and they're serving out the feast. And we're sitting in the bed row, you know what I mean? We got the rice, but sabji, hey, sabji, this line, no sabji. Meanwhile, you munch on the rice, finally sabji comes, no puri, puri, again, this line, puri, puri, puri. It goes on until you get the gulab jamuns, and not coming. So finally, at the end, you've eaten the feast and you didn't taste one bite. Because each time as you were eating, you were thinking of the preparation you were missing and you didn't taste anything. So what was the taste like in the feast? No taste at all. No taste. So in spiritual life, it is similar to that. We are dull. We are dull. Prabhupada would often use that term, dull. You are dull, dull, very dull. We are dull. We are not perceiving the taste. No taste. I have no taste in spiritual life. What do you mean? It's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's all over the place. So much taste. Look at these darshans. Look at the temple. Look at the festival that is constantly going on. We are in the spiritual world. It's a constant festival. A festival for the eyes. A festival for the ears, and so on. But if we are blind, then we will not see. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur in one letter is describing how in Srivas Angam in Mayapur, the kirtan has never stopped. It says the kirtan of the Panchatattva is going on in Mayapur every night. It still continues. It has never stopped. He said, and some can hear it. He said, and others can hear it through the scriptures. Yes. So it doesn't matter. Both is all right. And then he says, yes, some can see and some cannot see. Just like Prahlad was seeing the Supreme Personality of Godhead everywhere, wherever he looked. And Hiranyakasipu couldn't see him anywhere. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, and we are in between. So in between Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu. That is the problem. Higher taste, yes, yes. Yes, I have higher taste. And I also have lower taste. I have both. Higher taste and lower taste. That's the thing, yes. Lots of higher taste and lots of lower taste. So what to do now? Right? In between Prahlad and Hiranyakasipu. This is the difficulty. Then, of course, it is said that Mahat Seva Dwaram Ahur Vimuktes Tamo Dwaram Yoshitam Sangisam. That by serving the Mahatmas, the great devotees of the Lord, then one becomes liberated from these material desires. That is the gate through which one can, towards becoming free from being trapped in between higher nature and lower nature. And then, yes, tamo dvara. But if we associate with those who are overly attached to sex life and to money, kamani kanchini, yes, they will, that is the gate to hell, it says, or the gate to ignorance. Tamo dvara, gate to ignorance. So in this way, we can understand the way out. Simply serving the Vaishnavas. Shushusho sadadanasya vasudeva kataru chi sen mahat sevyavi pra punyatirtini sevi. It is by serving the devotees that one can develop vasudeva kataru chi, taste for hearing about Vasudeva. So that, and once there's taste, then everything is easy. Then, you know, it's just, then it's no problem at all. Then we can take any austerity. Then what is austerity? So this is important. Because material life is not that good. It is not that good. Some have said, yes, but spiritual life is not that good either. There are many difficulties that we face on the spiritual path. And the association of the Vaishnavas is being highlighted so much. But I tell you, it's not always easy because they're not always nice. They're not always that nice. It can be very difficult to stay in the association of the Vaishnavas. I mean, Trinada Visarichina, and so on. One must then develop great tolerance and so on. It's not always inspiring. What about that? So it's also difficult to serve people if they're not treating us so nicely. It's one thing if the Vaishnavas are embodying the qualities of Vaishnavas and are saintly people. Yes, we want to serve them. But if we see Vaishnavas, and we see they're not behaving like Vaishnavas, if we're seeing they're not even honest, if we're seeing they're exploiting their positions, and they're taking advantage of this movement, are they Vaishnavas or Kali Chelas, disciples of Kali? What are they? If we become so judgmental, and go around this movement and say, who is a Vaishnava and who is a Kali Chela, right? Then, you know, after a little while, there is a risk that we will see only Kali Chelas. They're all Kali Chelas. Yes. You know, hypocrisy. Looking very saintly. Go in love. And no one's looking. All Vaishnavas. Just weakness. There's weakness is there. So we see weakness. We see greed. We see Ishvara Bhav, this tendency to lord it over, to take control, aham Ishvara, Ishvara aham, aham bogi, this material tendency, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. Oh yes, we see it. Ritrogam, the disease in the heart, that's all it is. It still has a bit of the disease. But so do I. So do I, if I am honest. So, we see Vaishnavas. Therefore, one must serve all the Vaishnavas and see the credit in all the Vaishnavas. See how they can do so many things. So many things that we cannot do. They are doing things that we are not doing. Then, they deserve our obeisances. For doing these things that we cannot do. We should bow down. Yes. Srila Prabhupada occasionally would speak out in great humility. For example, there is a purport in the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, and it's the point where Dhruva Maharaj leaves his body. And at that point, as Dhruva Maharaj is about to leave his body, he sees a Pushpaviman, a transcendental plane that has come from Vaikuntha. There are messengers who have the four-armed forms like Lord Narayan. And then there is death. And then death offers obeisances to Dhruva Maharaj. And Dhruva Maharaj takes advantage to step on death. And he uses death as a stepping stone to enter into that Vaikuntha plane. And then it is about to take off. And he's about to go back to God. And then he says, wait a minute. What about my mother? What about my mother? She is the one who sent me on the spiritual path in the first place. When I didn't know how to deal with this issue that I couldn't sit on my father's lap, at that time, my mother said, I cannot help you either. No one can help you. Only God can help you, she said. And then Dhruva said, all right, where is he? Then his mother said, some say that he can be found in the forest. Dhruva said, all right, then I'm going to the forest. Very determined. So in this way, he appreciated that it was his mother who had sent him in the first place. And therefore he said, what about my mother? Is she going? And then he saw a second plane. He saw a second plane, and then his mother also went back, and these two planes went up and then went back to Godhead. So Srila Prabhupada in the purport is saying, and just as Dhruva, who was the son of Suruchi, and who delivered her, he delivered her. He said, in the same way, I'm hoping that one of my disciples will become a pure devotee and take me back to Godhead. Prabhupada is writing a purport like that. It's like a famous, amazing purport where Srila Prabhupada takes this very humble position and suddenly looks at his disciples as the great Vaishnavas who are delivering the whole world. And there are letters where Srila Prabhupada is writing that Krishna has sent me many spiritual masters in the form of my disciples. Is this artificial? No, Srila Prabhupada was never artificial. Srila Prabhupada was never just saying something to impress people. That was his wonderful quality. He did not try to impress anybody. He was completely genuine. And because he was completely genuine, it must be genuine. So how can he genuinely say that Krishna sent me many spiritual masters? But think about it. Every devotee is unique, is a unique individual. And every unique individual has some unique strength, has some unique quality of surrender. They are really surrendering in a way that we would hesitate, that we would not, that our mind goes, oh, this is too much. Because after all, we are so surrendered, but we're very selective in our surrender. I'll surrender to what I like. Right? I'm not just gonna, and I'm very careful to maneuver myself in a place, in this movement, which is okay with me, in a service that's all right with me, and thank you so much, but and I've found my niche. Yeah? Oh yes, I found my niche, and in my niche I'm comfortable, and then we see others are surrendering in areas where we don't. They're doing it. Gosh. They are my spiritual masters. I can learn from them. I can actually, if I would just learn that surrender from them, if they're doing it, then why can I not do it? They come from where I come from. They have the same problem I have, the same weaknesses that I have, they have. I saw a cartoon, and in the cartoon there are two people, they're sitting next to each other, and they're hiding their innermost secrets from each other. And then you see above their head the thought bubbles. Right? And in the thought bubbles, there are the same things. So they're hiding the same things from each other. Right? It's like hiding my lower nature. They're all the same lower nature. Same. The things we are hiding, that's why we know very well what everyone's hiding. Oh yes. Oh, you can look so deep into the heart of someone, yes, because I know I have the same thing in my own heart. I know very well what's there. Very well. And I know it exactly. I can, ah, when you spoke, it really felt like you're speaking to me, yeah, speaking about me. No, I was speaking about myself, but I'm the same like you. Yeah. Therefore, in this way, I could be like I'm speaking about you. In this way, we've all taken birth in this age of Kali. In Satya Yuga, those living beings who are qualified, and there are so many, go back to Godhead. Some don't go back to Godhead, take birth again, and some of them even carry on until the Treta Yuga. Right? In the Treta Yuga, the standard for the human form of life has become a little lower. And a little lower. In the Treta Yuga, even those who are not as perfect in the Satya Yuga get the human birth. What would we have been in Satya Yuga with our current consciousness? What do you think? Something like that. What do you think we would have been? Huh? What do you think? Huh? Now I'm a big guru, maybe I would have been a kangaroo. It's like, what can I say? You know? Still have that consciousness bouncing around from here to there. So, by the time it comes to Kali Yuga, in Kali Yuga, the facility is made very easy, and even those who have no qualification at all get a human form of life. Human form of life is now very cheap, very easily available, and here we are walking around. We've got the human form of life. It's a special concession. A special concession that even those who have animalistic propensities in the age of Kali get a human form of life. And here we're walking around. So, our weakness is very great. Therefore, mercy is very important. Here in this temple in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada placed Krishna Balaram on the central altar. And a lot of people have tried to give explanations. Some have said, because it's Raman Reti, the place of Krishna and Balaram is here. That's why Krishna and Balaram on the central altar. That's why. Others have said, actually, Srila Prabhupada is in Sakyabhav. He's in Sakyabhav, some say. Therefore, he put Krishna and Balaram. And whatever they say. And whether it's true or not, what do I know? But one thing I know is what Srila Prabhupada writes in the purports of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Srila Prabhupada writes that he has installed Krishna and Balaram here because they're non-different from Gornitai. That's what he writes. Because we are here on the strength of mercy. We don't belong here. We are not here in Vrindavan on the strength of pious birth. That's not us. We are here in Vrindavan just because of mercy, because of Prabhupada's mercy. There's that Prabhupada gate over the road, and I like it very much. Because it reminds us when we enter Vrindavan that we're coming into Vrindavan because of Prabhupada's mercy. He is our entrance to Vrindavan. Otherwise, we have no business here at all. And we can only stay here by being faithful to Srila Prabhupada. By being a faithful servant of Srila Prabhupada. It's the only way we can stay in Vrindavan and stay out of trouble. Otherwise, sooner or later, some offense here, some deviation there, and so on, will be the result. Yes. But if we remain faithful to Srila Prabhupada, then that connection with the mercy is there. And then even those who get a special concession. Kali Yuga is like a school. It is like a school for backward or retarded children with learner's problems. That's us, those who just couldn't learn in any education, failed in all the other schools, right? In all the other yugas. We failed in all the other schools. Here we are, now in the Kali Yuga school, and still not learning our lesson very well. But fortunately, Srila Prabhupada's very merciful. And with that, at the end of our life, there is hope. There is hope. There is hope that when our case is being judged, and when they look at our life and say, this one didn't do very well. Maybe it would be better if he does it one more time. But then someone will say, no, this is one of Prabhupada's party. Oh, Prabhupada's party? Okay, let him go. That's our hope. That is our hope. That in this way, we may get free from being trapped in a rotten material body. In this rotten material world with our rotten, stupid material desires that just bind us, and with our stinking false ego, right? Yes. And that, like, somehow or other, that is our hope, that we will be saved by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. I mentioned in the class we should not be judgmental all the time.
Yeah, so how to not be judgmental? What steps we should take?
How to be not judgmental? What steps should we take? We have to in general, we have to give credit to people. Only senior Vaishnavas who take responsibility for the spiritual life of others, they have to be judgmental. Like Srila Prabhupada used to say, it's my duty to find fault. It's my duty to find fault. But one can find fault as a duty if one behind it can give credit first. If we can first give credit, give so much credit. Actually, this is such a nice person. This is such a wonderful devotee. That's such great service. And then we say, but he could improve a little bit on this. He could improve a little bit of that. That is for a mature Vaishnava who is taking charge of others and tries sincerely to help them to serve Krishna better. Okay, then sometimes it seems that the senior Vaishnavas are judgmental, but actually they're not, because these are just little things that can be perfected. But it is wonderful, because a new person has weak faith. So a new person has the tendency to look at Vaishnavas with doubt in his heart, and therefore he pulls his microscope out of his pocket and puts it on the heart of the Vaishnava to see if he can find some imperfections. And that tendency is there. But the mature Vaishnava is very generous. And he's saying, yes, there may be some fault, but doesn't matter, because there are so many credits. Because even if there are some faults, Krishna will overlook if there are so many credits. Someone has to look at a person, try to look at how Krishna is looking at a person. I always say, when I speak about the first offense, not to blaspheme the devotees, that when you look at the devotee, see Krishna standing behind that devotee and smiling, looking at the devotee. And then you say something about that devotee. Then you say something. See, Krishna is smiling. Now you say, I think this guy is, And then you see Krishna's expression is changing. So in this way, just think about that. Krishna is looking, standing right behind, smiling upon his devotee. So nice. He's done such nice service for me. How can I forget? Krishna's looking like that. He's done such nice service for me. Krishna's not like, he had some greed in his heart. No, he's done such nice service for me. Like that. Like that. That helps. Anyway, we're all trying. It's difficult. It's difficult. My mother used to tell us a story about two princesses. And one, when she opened her mouth, roses came out. And the other one, when she opened her mouth, frogs would jump out. In our case, we try to have only roses, but sometimes the inadvertent frog just jumps out. And what to do? It's difficult. Practice makes perfect. Abhyasi yogi yuktena cheta samanya kavina. One must practice. Okay. The day carries on. The kirtan will continue now. And prasadam is also going to happen. So we'll end the class now. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.